Blog Talk Radio.
Political Gravity. John is already on the air. Tonight's show, we're going to be talking about three things: San Francisco, the problem between the officers that caused four to be transferred, foregoing materialism and not living a non-materialistic life, and a cartoon contest for religious toleration, and I'll explain that later. Welcome to the show, John.
Well, greetings, Hammer. And how is it in the frozen wastelands of the tundra?
41, 35-mile-an-hour wind, and not pleasant. How about you?
Oh, you know, we live in the good life in California. At night, it gets about 55 to 60. When's the last time you had that as a high?
It was actually 70 a couple days last week. We just had a downslide this weekend. It kind of happened overnight.
Yes.
Did you like the idea of playing "We Built This City" by Starship, produced in 1985?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it used to be Jefferson Airplane and a Bay Area band, and they changed it to Starship, and they brought in a new lead singer, Mickey Thomas, to sing along with Grace Slick, who was the traditional front person as compared to a front man. But what's interesting is, in a way, for them, it was kind of a sellout era for them because they normally were very true to their own style, and then when Mickey Thomas came in, they started using songs written for them that were very pop. Like, if you listen to the song, it's not really a rock song. It's kind of a pop song, and here they're talking about building the city on rock and roll. So it's kind of funny, but, you know, they went with the times and took the money and ran, and so it's kind of funny.
Yeah, I remember better under the name Jefferson Starship. That was more familiar to me than just Starship.
Right. So, they were a band through that whole era with Woodstock and with the 60s and kind of the anti-establishment type of mentality among college students. And so they were one of those bands that came out of the Bay Area, which is very well connected to Berkeley and to the whole a peace and love movement, with everyone going out to San Francisco, and Jimi Hendrix and the Grateful Dead and all that era. It was a different time, certainly.
God. Well, I did like Grace Slick. That person was fairly popular, too. Now, I want to jump into the most... They were very talented, and they kind of remind me of REO Speedwagon in a way. only a little more crisp. So I wanted to mention, yeah, you remember REO Speedwagon? I've been around for you.
They were for years very popular in Middle America, touring and playing, you know, places, but never able to get the popularity. And then finally, I'm trying to think of the album. It's something about audio, something. But
REO Speedwagon?
Yeah, it was something like audio. Boy, I want to. I'll come up with it. But basically what happened is they had a couple hits that went, you know, number one or top 10 and really launched them. But before then, for years, they were touring and, you know, having like 10,000, you know, seat arenas playing across the country, but they could never get a top 40 song. And so it's kind of
neat. Well, they're
very
excellent. They were one of the top three bands in Mankato in 1981 that college students listen to. I'll look up the album titles. Are you in route right now?
Actually, I'm just walking in the door, but they had a couple songs in there. Kind of the big one that really, I think, put them on the map was I'm Going to Keep on Loving You. And it's kind of a ballad, pop song.
You took the words out of my mouth. The top songs were Keep on Loving, Take It on the Run, Can't Fight This Feeling. And I'm trying to. I still haven't found the album titles. I'll look it up in a second. So, anyway.
Go ahead.
No, I was gonna. I can't do the other thing while I'm doing this. I'm gonna read some information in a minute based on. I have a joke for you. I can tell you while I'm looking up the titles. So Don and I were talking about a lot of things last night, but we somehow touched upon Bruce Jenner again, and we made a joke. You want to hear it?
Oh, go for it.
Remember when he got in that multi-car crash on Pacific Coast Highway?
Oh, yeah.
We decided that... He wouldn't have gotten in the accident had he been a male driver. It was only because he became a female driver that it got messed up.
Wow.
And that I'm the one who came up with it, so you should be proud of me. So their first album was called REO Speedwagon, and then it was REO2, then it was Riding the Storm Out, Lost in a Dream, This Time We Mean It, REO, Nine Lives, A Decade of Rock, High Infidelity, Wheels Are Turning, Life as We Know It, The Hits, The Earth, A Small Man, His Dog, and a Chicken. That sounds like a good one.
High Infidelity was what broke them. If I'm not mistaken, you know, they probably had seven or eight albums before this. They were a band out there, and everyone knew them, and they were phenomenal, except they just couldn't get that number one kind of hit or a top 40 hit, which is what you needed to get on the map, and they finally got that. But they weren't an overnight success. They were out for years. In fact, I always thought they may never have a big hit. So I think High Infidelity, that came out, and then that blew up.
Well, I like them particularly because Dave Vorthams is a guy I dated in college, loved them. Now, when I went to UW La Crosse, everybody was into Springsteen and Dylan, and then I transferred to Mankato State, and everybody was into Jim Morrison and REO, which is kind of an odd mix. But I'm going to switch to we have three formal topics tonight. The first one was four police officers in San Francisco named Michael Robeson, Noel Schwab, Rain Dougherty, and Michael Sells. They somehow got busted for exchanging creepy text messages. It came on the heels of a federal prosecution and conviction of Sergeant Firminger on corruption charges. Now, all four officers, they basically got reassigned. I think they might have been busted due to a company called Alternet, who made these text messages public. these are, I'm just going to give you three or four examples of what they said. Ian Firminger was also the main core of the situation, the one who got brought up on corruption charges. It's okay to kill, I'm just going to say Uyghurs. It's okay to kill Uyghurs because it's not against the law to put an animal down. Do you celebrate Kwanzaa at your school, Firminger wrote? Yeah, we burn the cross on the field, then we celebrate White Mass instead of Christmas. It's worth every penny to live here in Walnut Creek, away from the savages. Walnut Creek's a suburb of Frisco, which you're probably familiar since you're from that area. Those guys are pretty stupid. Ask some dumb-ass questions you would expect from a black rookie. Sorry if they are your buddies. The Buffalo Soldier was why the Indian wouldn't shoot the Enners, Uyghurs, they found for the Confederate. They thought they were sacred buffalo and not human. Gunther Firminger was a famous slave auctioneer. I guess Ian Firminger is the one joking, but then they talked about some other guy. My wife had two friends over that don't know each other. The cool one says to me, get a drink, nigger, not knowing the other is just happen to be married to one right now. LMFAO, laughing my ass off. White power. I don't know, they were just, it was a cross battery of messages that, you know, ended up proliferating and somehow got in the public eye. And it's really unacceptable. When you think about the city of San Francisco, that if you ever saw that movie with Sean Penn about that gay guy who was persecuted and then became a city councilman, basically, I mean, it's a city that's gone through a lot of transitions. It's probably one of the most tolerant racial cities in the world, as well as for homosexuals. And it's kind of amazing that they have this type of racist attitudes on the force, wouldn't you say?
Actually, no. I think that I think everyone at some level is a bit racist. Some people, you know, full blown, some people mixed, and other people like 1%, maybe 0.1% of whatever, you know, just a teeny, teeny little bit. I guess there's someone out there in the world that is totally, perfectly vanilla neutral, never did a thing wrong or thought a bad thought about another race in their life. But I think we all have had experiences that have forced us or made us come to maybe a bad conclusion, but we're a little discriminant. And, I mean, I'll give you an example. If you're walking down the street and it's 11 o'clock at night and you see 10 black men with alcohol bottles in their hand walking towards you, are you going to walk up to them and say, hey, bro, slap me 5? Or are you going to try to get to the other side of the street? You go, that's racist. It's like, yeah, but based on experience, the odds are they're not going to be coming from a church meeting wanting to give you a ride home. It just doesn't the way it plays out.
Well,
so,
one time I stopped in South Central at a black church and at a midweek service.
That's a black church. Were you alone on a street corner where
I was leaving my friend's house. I was leaving my friend's house on 94th and Central, and I didn't have to work that day, and I just decided to stop in.
You didn't answer the question properly. You talked about going to a black church. I'm talking about encountering some homies at the street corner with alcohol, guys in the back alley.
If it was 7 o'clock at night, and I was in West Hollywood, and there were 4 blacks with alcohol, liquor bottles, I wouldn't cross the other side of the street. And if I was in Watts and it was 9 o'clock at night, I might cross the street.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. In the hood, I'm not talking the white, you know, West, you know, Hollywood and where, you know, white people, even though there's homeless, it's white people and it's middle, you know, class, and you've got police. I'm talking about in the hood you know, were some brother people or maybe even some angry little Mexicans running around, and someone say that's racist. It's like that's reality. That there, you don't find, you know, middle class white people on the street corner in Compton or, you know, off of Florence in Inglewood, you know, handing out Boy Scout cookies. You just don't. So
okay, I'm going to throw one at you, John. I lived in Boyle Heights. I was the only white in a 5-mile radius. I had a black child. It's not a matter of crossing the street because I lived on the street. Now, let me throw this one at you. If you were a sworn officer, whether you were in Fresno, San Jose, or Oakland, you were a sworn police officer, let's say, because you are half Latino, half white, let's say you work with 30% black, 50% Latino, and 20% whites. You're a sworn officer. You have a job to do. You have paperwork. You have drives. You have ride-alongs. You have, you know, are you going to talk to your coworkers in a manner that's defacing another race, especially in a state that's so diverse?
I would be hopefully smart enough to keep such thoughts into my inner little sanctum and not, especially with my job in the line, voice it out. But now here's the question I have, that's answering your question. The question I would have to follow up with that, were these texts personal messages and did they leak personal information that is no one else's business and make it public?
Well, I think what happened, I am not an expert on this topic.
Well,
I just found out about
it.
What happened was there was another officer named Firminger who got brought up on corruption charges. During the investigation, they discovered these texts. I don't know if they were on a police-paid phone or on a personal phone, but needless to say, they were brought out into the open, and now there's hell to pay because people think it's ridiculous that these type of you know, community police officers, which is what they call them nowadays, are behaving like this. So I don't have the answer to your question. I'm speculating.
So in other words, kind of my viewpoint is if it was obtained, now maybe they got, you know, a subpoena or some kind of clearance from the court because you can tap phones and you can get personal records if it's an ongoing criminal investigation. And so if it was legally obtained, I would say, these guys are just really stupid. If it was personal information that was obtained illegally, one of the blessings of our country is you're innocent until proven guilty. Now, I don't agree with people doing criminal things, but if you illegally obtain the evidence, I really have to presume they're innocent and throw the stuff out and leave it alone. There are a lot of cops and a lot of people in every sector that have prejudiced bad thoughts, you know, hey, throw the book at them. And again, if these were obtained legally, throw the book at them. That's fine.
You know what? In some ways, this is bad to say, but in some ways I wish some of this stuff wouldn't come out. I wish it could be handled internally by the San Francisco police. I don't want to know about people like this. I want to think that people are normal acting and don't have racist thoughts running through their mind. I want them to be able to do their job without perceiving I wonder what they say about the homeless people. There's a big homeless population in San Francisco. I mean, one was beaten to death recently in Los Angeles, but it's just kind of, like my older sister said, the whole world is being exposed through different venues of media. People got smartphones, they got videos. There's so much exposure out there that it seems like we're inundated with depressing stories, needless to say.
Yeah, I don't want to go inside people's minds. You know, they have a right to their personal thoughts, their freaky thoughts. The reason I say that is because, hey, half the people prosecuting them, they've got closets. And the politicians have closets. And everyone's got closets. Do we want to open them all up? What about the freedom to think as we want to? it may not be popular. I don't agree with hate or prejudice, but the point is people have a right to hate. You know, and now they go, well, they're in public service and they're working with the public, and if these are their attitudes, it could affect their job. You know, hey, I'm down with that. If they're public servants, they need to set an example. But again, how are we obtaining the information? And that's why I don't want Nazi Germany. I don't want to be Russia or China. I don't want the government opening my mind and probing it, because maybe what I think will become unpopular tomorrow, and then they're going to just, you know, throw me in a prison. So I give a little leeway here for people with racist thoughts, even though I don't agree with it.
Well, the thing is this kind of parlays into our next topic, and I'll explain that. I agree with you to some extent, even myself. For example, let's say somebody at my work just brings up a casual comment. Like, I was at a party Friday night, and this is a good example. I was at a party Friday night. There were about 20-something girls there. They're in college still. There was a gay guy who had the party. There was a black guy from Ghana and his white roommate and me. Now, there was a pretty girl there named, I'm just going to change her name, Alicia, who's Native American. She has long black hair. And the guy from Ghana was flirting his ass off with her, but not disrespectfully, just little jokes here and there. Well, when I saw her at work tonight, I said, why don't you like that guy? But he's older. He's like 35, but he looks 22 because he's so thin. She said, I don't date black guys. That's a personal choice. You don't have to date people of certain races. But someone probably could misconstrue that to think that she's racist, because I had just shown her a picture of my half-black son. Now, a lot of people in the Midwest are reserved because their parents are racist, and their parents don't approve of interracial dating. But actually, in Minnesota, it's pretty cool because we have one of the highest dating ratios. And I've recently seen prom pictures of 17-year-old girls at a prom with a black boy, and their parents have no problem posting the pictures. But the fact of the matter is that people have opinions and viewpoints, and it's based on their cultural heritage. Now, Don and I covered a topic last night. It was about the Garland, Texas cartoon contest, and it was an anti-Muslim contest. Don and I thought it was staged, and I'll explain that in a minute. But basically, this woman in Texas, who seems to be like a religious conservative, had a contest to see who could draw the best cartoon to mimic Muhammad, the prophet. She didn't make any bones about it. She was open and direct, and two people ended up getting shot there, because they brought guns and they were going to gun some people down, but it was the two Muslims who got shot in the end. Basically, if you're that open about religion and racism, then you will get retribution on some level, in my opinion, in this country, if you're extreme on your viewpoints. What is your opinion on the few things I just mentioned?
Well, I'm a Christian. I believe Jesus Christ is the Lord and Savior, and that you need to believe on him to enter heaven. I can't tell you how many times in TV, radio, media, entertainment, I should say, that the name of Jesus is laughed at, it's looked down upon, you can't even go with one show where they're saying God damn this or Jesus Christ or, you know, effing Jesus, whatever, right? And I don't blow people up. I don't kill them. They have the right to be disrespectful to my Lord and Savior, and I respect their freedom to do that, even though I disagree with it. There's a lot of stuff that goes on that is stated that is disrespectful to short people or dumb people or fat people or whatever. I want a country where you have that freedom to be that stupid fool that you are. Because maybe some of the things I believe you won't like, and I don't want that to be censored. I don't want people to lock me up. I don't want people to illegally get into my information. And one of the rules basically these cops broke, or one of the foolish things, a life lesson is, don't put things in writing that can, you know, compromise your job, your life, your reputation. You can think things, fine. You can say things in private to your friends, but you don't put it in a text, an email, a letter, any kind of, because basically the communication changes when you say it to when you put it in writing. Don't ask me how, but if you can say to a friend, it's like, well, minorities are just kind of stupid, you know, I'm stupid Mexican. I mean, I'm half Mexican, so I can say, hey, stupid beaner, you know. It's like, and some people, they act like stupid beaners. I have people in my culture that you sit there and go, thank you for confirming the white man's, you know, prejudice. Thank you for being there in your white beater in your front yard with your car on jack stands and a Budweiser can in your hand, big fat belly sticking out there with your Mexican music blaring. Thank you for confirming everything they think about us, right? But the point is, they have the freedom to do that. But put that in writing. Tweet that out, especially if you're a celebrity, you're dead meat. You're Hitler. It's just, you know, the way it rolls. So,
remember at that company we worked at together? One time I used the word beaner, and not you, but another guy who was half Latin complained to BR that it was an offensive term.
Right. And all it is basically,
I thought it was a cute name. I'd never heard it before. I was from the Midwest. I thought it was a cute name.
Here's where the, I think where the misunderstanding with most people is. There, in every culture, if you're white, if you're black, if you're Mexican, if you're Jewish, if you're, or you go into religion, you're Islamic, whatever there is, there's always a very good element of people in that culture or in that race. And there's also people that are stereotypically the worst of the culture. You know, if you're white, it's, you know, redneck, white trash, trailer park. You know, if you're, you know, Hispanic, it's, you know, you're greasy beaner or you're lettuce picking, you know, illegal. And if you're black, I can't even mention the words because that's untouchable. Same thing with Jewish or whatever. It's, for some reason, it's okay to bag on Nazis because, well, they killed Jews and this is a Jewish media-controlled town, entertainment town. And that's not racist of me to say it. That's just the reality of it. That's how it rolls. Put that in writing, right? Watch what the headlines are about me. But the point is, they're just describing the worst element of a certain culture. You know, in the black community, at least in the Bay Area, there were people that used the N-word. But if you really wanted to insult someone beyond the N-word, you would say they're an Oakland N-word. They're an Oakland Negro. And that was the worst of the worst in the Bay Area. You know, it was one and where I grew up in is actually, if you played sports, it was a compliment among the brothers if they called you the N-word, because me being, you know, not black, it meant I was at their level. I could play ball with them. So I grew up where it was a compliment. When I came down to L.A., I was shocked that it was so reprehensible, because half of my childhood, I grew up trying to earn the N-word so I could be hip and cool, because I like sports. Go figure.
Well, I was watching American History X the other day, and God, that was a intense film. It was with Edward Norton. So there was this overweight 285-pound or 300-pound white guy in the movie who was friends with Edward Norton. They kind of had a close circle of friends, and they were neo-Nazis. Well, Edward Norton had to go to prison for a few years, but his friend was really obtrusive, and he always wanted everybody around him to think the same way that other people thought. Well, they played the black people on the basketball court, and the white neo-Nazis won. And the agreement was is not to name-call or fight, but if the whites won, the blacks would lose the privilege of playing on that court, and they could never come back. So the black people accepted the deal, and when they lost, they left. They didn't cause a fuss. But the white people were bragging and jumping up and down in the stands and exerting their own supremacy ideas. So the thing was is I could tolerate about 20 minutes of the movie until the overweight kid came to the house of the other neo-Nazis, and then he tried to brainwashing the younger brother and forcing him to say words and opinions he didn't want to. And the other older brother who had just gotten out of prison got angry about it and told him, you know, to slow his roll and stop being a bully. And it was just a disturbing movie, you know, with people with that many distinctive ideas about race. I didn't like watching movies like that. It was disturbing.
Here's a question, because, you know, I always say follow the truth where it leads you. Okay, let's take sports, because it's kind of easy it's not much of a debate. Let's follow basketball. How many basketball players are black in the NBA?
About 65% to 75%.
Right, and maybe even higher. At one point, it was about 90. I think because of the Euro players coming over, it's gone down. But there's many teams where you could go, all five starters of the team are black. I mean, many teams. In football, again, you know, how many players are black? That's 75% or more. You know, usually how many of the quarterbacks are white? You know, most of them. And there's exceptions to that. But the point is, what's the black population in this country? What, 10%, 15%? 13%. So how can, if they're 13% of the population, how can in our most lucrative popular sports, which is football and in basketball, how come they dominate the sport? And you go, is it, you know, like, I guess they're physically, as a whole, as a majority, better, or more. Any if it was China, you know, if we had 10% Koreans and 70 or 80% of basketball players were Korean, you'd go, hey, these there's something physical here going on. People can't state that, right? They can't put that in writing, but that's the facts. That's the reality. So now here's the question: if it's physically, you have a group that's better. I'm just speaking statistically and by evidence. What if a particular group tests better, whether it's Jewish or white or Euro or whatever, and on intelligence tests they rate better? You know, and someone says, well, they're smarter, and yet if you were to say that, you're racist. It's like, well, is that racist or is it reality? Yeah, I know you could say, you know, you
something, okay. Asian kids do better on math tests as an average, then it doesn't matter what country they're taking the tests in, whether it's Japan, China, or the U.S., they score better. I think it's fair to say that black people have natural ability in athletics, especially football and basketball, and baseball is more of a crapshoot because there's Mexicans, whites, and blacks in there. But the fact of the matter is the black race is strong. They have a lot of natural talent. Now, part of it's socio upbringing, because if you grow up in Minnesota, most kids are going to learn how to play hockey before anything else. And,
right.
You know, I just think that I'm not going to venture to say that I'm an expert on the subject. I know there's a friend of mine, her son runs 11.0 100 meters in 11th grade. He's the top one in the whole area, and he's black. I mean, I don't know. It's obvious that black people have a lot of natural talent in sports. It doesn't mean white people don't.
And
white people are good at tennis. They're good at distance running. they're good at a lot of things, but a lot of them aren't as good as blacks at the team sports. Let's face it.
Right, and that's kind of what I'm saying. I think the problem is if you say, okay, just because you're black, you got to be able to play basketball. Just because you're Latin, you got to be able to know how to salsa dance. Or just because you're this or that, you're Asian. Therefore, you have to be smarter and be able to be a doctor or something like that. Or you're Jewish, you've got to become a lawyer or a doctor, you know, because you're Jewish. It's like there are some people that are Jewish that just aren't good enough or smart enough to be in those fields. But the point of what I'm saying, I understand it's racist or it's wrong to say just because you're something, I'm going to prejudge you. That's prejudice, prejudging the person. But I also think it's stupid or it's untruthful to not say as a whole, this certain group tests better by numbers. You know, whatever reason, you can say, well, the black kids didn't get enough nutrition because they're raised by a single mom and they're not encouraged by society. I'm just saying, strip away the facts. You know, if they still then can jump higher and run faster than half of the white guys. So, you know, it's like I think people just try to back up their own arguments and tilt the information. I'm not trying to tilt it anyway. I'm just reporting what I see. And I think what happens is people are just – it's like saying – white people are no different than black people. No, their skin's darker, their hair's kinky. That's a difference. Well, maybe physically they're better athletically. That's a difference. Maybe a certain white portion of people test higher on SAT scores. So what? That's a difference. It doesn't mean that one's better than the other or that all black people are dumb or all white people can't play basketball. It just means that there's a more of a propensity as a whole. And we should celebrate that and be happy and not be ignorant or like, oh, there is no difference. There are differences. You know, it's okay. I mean, how many 7'1" Mexican basketball players do we have? As a whole, if I go in public, the majority of Mexicans are going to be like 5'7" and smaller. I know that.
Okay, but you know, you want to know what's a core? You know those four police officers who made those negative texts? I listened to Anita Hill on NPR today. Whatever happened to racial sensitivity training or sexual harassment training and stuff like that? I mean, they know better in this modern era how to behave. Don't they know that there is ramifications for treating people that way or even thinking that way or even behaving that way? I mean, even within their own dignity, it's not acceptable. It's not acceptable to behave like that.
I'm sure the first day they graduated from the police academy or whatever training they went through or whatever college, I'm sure they didn't vocally think this way. Or if they did, you know, some of them maybe even didn't even think this way. But I think it's usually deep-rooted from childhood. But the point is,
well, they could
have
been in a police culture where someone was promoting racism. Like maybe you're right. Maybe they weren't racism, but there was some doohickey who was high on the food chain who started behaving like this, and then tried to engage him in this type of behavior.
They go to work, right? They're driving around in the cars, and they pick up, you know, the first 20 people that they see on the streets that are either dealing drugs or are homeless are minorities. And you could say it's economic. Sure, oh, fine. But the point is, that's what they're being exposed to. That's who they're getting freaked out about. And then they go into the person that's been there 25 years. It's their super. And he goes, oh, yeah, it's those damn, you know, blank, blank, blanks. And they go, yeah, after a while, it's like, I got to fingerprint these guys, and then I'm going to let them out, and I got to pick them up again. And this thing grows. And then the first time they vocalize it, they text it like, oh, yeah, you know, because maybe their super says, yeah, we picked up some more gorillas last night, you know, and a bunch of animals, right? And they go, no one puts on a siren and jumps in there and arrests them. It's like, oh, you know, he said it, I said it. We've been texting back and forth for years. We joke about it in the showers or whatever, you know, in the locker room. And then one day someone goes, I'm going to do a little sting operation. Suddenly all this stuff is exposed and we're shocked. Now this stuff's going on all the time. Payoffs, bribery, you know, bad behavior. I just, as long as it was obtained legally, is what I'm saying. Because if you're going to bust them for stepping over the line, then you've got to play by the rules too. You can't do illegal tapping, you know, and you've got to use a fair standard if you're going to go by the book.
The thing is I agree with everything you just said. It's just disappointing because we have enough problems in our country. Yes, they have to solve crime on the streets. They have to do that, and they have to be aware of what's going on in the city of San Francisco, but they're making it more difficult for themselves by having this type of attitude. They should be focused on the job, focused on what needs to be done, not try to read between the lines and make color attitudes. Now, I had to make a quick announcement tonight because for anybody who's listening, we've already talked, we've already been on the air 40 minutes. I put on the byline of our title, Cartoon Contest for Religious Toleration. I'm putting up $20, and my website is janessaconquers.blogspot.com, and I'll put up the awards. I will put up $20 for anyone who can draw a cartoon promoting religious toleration. It's not a lot of money. It's just a symbolic gesture. I want to be a peacemaker, not a troublemaker. I want to live in a country where people accept each other, whether we agree with their religious beliefs or their cultural background. I'm tired of this shit. It's just real disgusting the way our country behaves at times and the people in it. Now, of course, we have a lot of loving people. Today's Mother's Day, and I went to a full church of people who ate Swedish pancakes. There's a lot of good people in the world, and our church is building a $10 million facility for homeless teenagers in Duluth. So I'm not saying that all the things in the world are bad. I'm just saying that some things are. What's your comment on that, John?
Well, we're definitely instructed to help the poor, remember the poor. And, you know, I've done that, you know, pretty much all my life. I have to say, basically, everyone who knows me has either owes me money or has owed me money in their life. And I mean relatives, friends, circle, extended circle, far circle. So
I paid you back.
No, I'm not incriminating anyone. I'm stating just as a fact. If you know, before I make a statement, I'm basically clarifying or giving myself, you know, certain authorities. Like I've lived my life, you know, like if I collected what people owed me, I still owe a debt to Wells Fargo and Bank of America, but probably about $180,000. And
I remember you saying that. Mm-hmm.
If people paid me back just all their, you know, I'll pay you back once I get my money or my this or that, can you bail me out? I would be debt free, you know, or close to it. I know I would because I one time I did all the numbers of bad business deals, loans.
So would you be even if everybody paid you back?
If they just paid back what they said they would pay me back, yeah. Now, here's the issue, though, is I was the one who loaned the money, and it was my responsibility. You know, it basically, maybe after the first 10 or 20,000 or whatever, I should have been wiser about it. But I have really good credit, and so and I'm very responsible of paying
Jill?
My bills and bulging. So the point being is that after all this, I mean, to a certain point, I come to the conclusion if people need money or food or help, a lot of times because they just don't manage their own life. Now, I know if Don would probably disagree, you know, because he works with people that are very disadvantaged, and he would say the system has created this and that there's no way around, like they're, you know, it's inevitable, like people are pawns. And I can see his point in some communities, but I just feel most of the people I run into, I could be homeless just like them, or I could be on assistance. I just choose to work my butt off and to be stubborn about it and to be creative. And most people are unwilling to humble themselves and keep their mouth shut. Half the gigs I get, if I open my mouth and just blurted out what I thought, or was unhumble enough to clean the floor or wipe a dog's butt or whatever, I'd lose my gigs. I don't know if people have the capability to do that. Maybe that's fair to say. But I know for myself, I could be homeless in a month.
Well,
if
you
I
have
just started.
To keep your mouth shut because you work in the entertainment industry and you're around domineering people who boss you around a lot. I mean, I hate to put it like that, but...
That's the nature, and that's the point I'm saying is I'll be at the gas station pumping gas, and some homie comes up to me wanting a handout, and it's like, you know what you need to do is actually go and apply for a job, even if it's a jack-in-the-box or whatever, sweep a few floors, work a security job, hustle, walk your neighbor's dog, empty some garbage cans, whatever you need to do, and be, you know, a little smarter with your life. Now, some people, yeah, they're handicapped, they're in a wheelchair, they've got, you know, health issues. I give tolerance to that. I'm just saying there's a lot of people, that's really not the issue. Now, on the other hand, we are going to get into a time in the next 2 to 5 years where things are going to so bottom out that, I mean, you have people that are rocket scientists looking for work at fast food places. So I'm kind of the last couple of years on out, we're seeing a different culture of homeless people and people disadvantaged. I'm saying from the era I grew up in, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, a lot of the time it's just people are just lazy or inefficient. But now we're running into an era where it doesn't matter what you do, there's just not going to be jobs or work available to survive. And it's going to be a crazy time.
Right. Well, when you say you're at the gas station, could you repeat that comment?
Well, as far back as 10 minutes before the show, I was at 99er, and I was putting water in my car because I have a blown head gasket. I can only drive about 10 minutes before I have to pull over to the side of the road and add water. And most people would go, oh, I just can't do that. You know, I can't drive my car. It's like I wheel and deal. And I put up my hood, and I'm adding water, and guess what? A homie comes up to me and says, hey, do you have any oil for my car? I mean, how many people carry oil in their car? Well,
they don't. They usually buy a quart and put it right in.
Right. So, but, you know, he was under the assumption, call it a stereotype, I'm a Mexican, I must have jumper cables. Well, guess what? I do. I must have extra water. Guess what? I do. I've got pliers. I've got, you know, every tool you can imagine. I've got backups. You know, I carry everything with me. If you were broken down, you know, we'll get you down the road if we can duct tape you. And the point is, yeah, I had an extra two things, bottles of oil, and I gave him one. But the point of what I'm saying is that I just think a lot of people, it's like it's inevitable they're going to be, it's like if you gave everyone a bailout of free food, paid their rent, I'm just saying they're still going to be wanting more because they don't take care of their business. You can feed everyone in Africa, give them a meal. I'm just saying they're going to have more kids and they're not dealing with their stuff. And I feel we just, everyone needs to be responsible and take care of your own stuff. Now, if you're
that's the German side of you. Northern Europeans, German and Scandinavian, we were taught to be self-sufficient and not reliant on others. Not every culture is like that, but I'll tell you some habits of people at gas stations and corners in California. One trick at the gas station that people use when they're panhandling is, you know, they'll be at the pump with their car, the car's parked, and they'll come up to you and say, you know, I'm short a little money, I need $5 in gas to get home, could you help me out? That's the one I've heard very commonly the last few years. And It's that's a little different than asking for oil, because in the sense of that other guy, he needed oil. He didn't need gas. He didn't need money. He needed oil. So
he
like
had a
you
specific
said,
need.
It was
right.
Yeah, it was poor planning on his part. He didn't have the $4 or $5 for the the can of oil. So basically, what
can
you
say?
And
I didn't mind giving it to him because he was in need, and he was my help.
So
was
did you give
Mexican.
Him oil?
Yeah, oh yeah, I gave it to him. Yeah, but it was a need. It wasn't panhandling for money where you buy alcohol or drugs. It's who's going to borrow oil and try to sell it, right? I mean, basically, he had a van to the side of 99er, and his hood was up too. I know he's working on his cars. Like, it's not a big deal. It's a big planet we want to share. But the point is that I used to work downtown at this company that we both worked at, and I would fill up gasoline, about half a mile from there occasionally. And over the course of the 10 or 11 years I worked there, there were people I saw at that gas station every time over a period of years. And they would come up to me, and half the time they wouldn't even remember asking me, and they would give me the same line. Not for like a week or two. I'm talking years. Like, oh, I need money to go down.
What was the line?
Oh, it'd be like, oh, I have to be in San Diego or San Francisco or, Salinas or Bakersfield. I just need money for my bus ticket, and I have to see my family. Or, oh, I have a medical problem, and if you can just help me out with this, I'll be able to. Well, after 3 or 4 years, it's like, yeah, you're really going to go to the doctor. You're going to go to Dr. Jack Daniels is where you're going. You can smell the alcohol on him. Or they'd be like,
well,
oh,
I know something funny.
Go ahead.
Finish your story first.
Or they would say, I'm a vet, and I was injured in the war. And they're walking up. They're not. They don't have missing limbs. They don't have a cane. And I would tell them, I shattered my leg in concert. I six places. I shattered my foot, ankle, and my heel. And one side of me is 1 inch shorter. Actually, we measured. I had a friend help me measure. It's 3/4 of an inch shorter on one side. It creates an incredible amount of pain. And guess what? I work every day, brother. It's like you gotta suck it up. And just it's called work. It's not called fun or playtime. It's called work. And it's a curse. It's not supposed to be fun. And it's like somewhere along the line, he quit. Whoever these people are, they quit. Now, maybe they're justified, fine. But I'm just saying they stopped trying years ago.
Yeah, I do have one ex-friend that you met, Daria. She used to panhandle around Christmas. It's not because she was broke. She always had a part-time job doing something. But she did panhandle. She said you had to dress down to do it, so you look poor. And it was a conscious effort on her part to do it. Now, she had a rough life. She had lost two of her kids to the system because the older kid busted her for drugs, unfortunate to say. But anyways, the other thing is there where you and I used to work in downtown L.A., there was an entrance down by the Fashion District. If you took the 10 home, which you did a lot, there was, how like when you go down through the Fashion District and then you get back on the 10 freeway over by that Jack in the Box where you used
yes.
to... I remember you told me a story about that once, but I don't want to say it publicly. But basically, there was a blonde-haired guy there. It looked like he was from Ireland or something. He had wavy blonde hair. He used to jump up and down in the streets, flay his hands left and right, had a silver tin cup in his hand, was enthusiastic, and he used to panhandle to cut people in cars. Now, I was thinking that anybody who's that enthusiastic and didn't get down about what he had to do must have been a cool person. That was one of the few homeless people that I was impressed by.
I will, like, in general, living in LA, because so many people panhandle, and again, here's how I weigh it. Scripturally says taking care of widows and orphans is the most purest form of religion, you know, most purest form of serving God. There's nothing in it for you. These are people that are in a hopeless situation. So I weigh it. Is this person an elderly widow? Paul even used to say, if you're going to take care of people, if the widow's under a 3 score, I think it's like 60 years old, I could be mistaken, but if she's you know, elderly, basically, and he talks about all the qualifications, if they've served other people, washed people's feet, which was a custom back then, if they, you know, took care of those that were needy, if they raised their family well, you know, if they did all these things, take them in. And the others, it's like, let people, they can take care of themselves or find other people in their family to take care of them, so the church isn't has to absorb this. And that's how I look at it. You know, you're 35, you're 40, you're panhandling, you're a dude, you don't have missing limbs. Suck it up, you know. And I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not trying to be heartless, but the point is, you can work. If I put a gun to your head and said, go to work, they could probably find a job. Now, some people can't, but I would say the majority, they just stop trying. And I could be in the same place if I didn't hustle my butt off. And if I lose both of my jobs, you know what? I'll give you an example. When someone says, I can't find work, I go, well, how many did you go yesterday? No. Well, go today and look for a job. And they'll go, okay, I'll go check out a couple of places. No, from 8 to 5, since you don't have a job, your job is to go look for work. I guarantee you, 90% of the people that don't have jobs are not spending from 8 to 5 getting a little bus pass and going all day looking for work. They're just not. And I know that because people have done this. I said, let's go, get in my car. And they're like, what are we doing? It's like, we're looking for work. And I drive them down the street.
Technically, you're supposed to spend 8 hours doing it if you're collecting unemployment.
But they don't. They go to 2 or 3 places. They get a signature that they look for, and they're done. I'm going to go home now and watch Jerry Springer or Oprah or whatever is on TV, Judge Judy or whatever. But what I'm saying is, everyone that's told me that thing, I say, get in the car, let's go, and I'll drive down the street. This place says they're hiring. Go in there and get an application. Well, I don't want it always starts this way. I don't want to work that job. Oh, you don't want to work that job. The key word is you don't want to work. Well, I don't want to do fast food, yet you don't want to work. That's a different issue than there's no work available.
And did you used to work with individuals in that situation?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Being in the church, you always have people down and out, right? We attract it. We're the first place
to
go.
Yeah, see, like, our church only took in a few. We used to have a nursery, and occasionally we would let church members live in there if they were in a bad situation. But we were pretty fussy about who lived there, but we have had people at our church. We don't take people in overnight, but we have had people at our church who do not want to work, and you can tell by their lifestyle what the situation is.
There's some people that need a helping hand, and there's some people that just want a free ride. And I'm all for anyone who needs I'll give you an example, and I've told this story before, but my great-great-grandma Tomasa came over to the United States. She crossed the border, or however she got in. I think she worked out a deal where she came on a train over here, ended up at Union Station, Los Angeles. She had to put she wore a very large hoop-style dress, two kids underneath the dress, and smuggled them in there. Arrived at the station, was walking around, a middle-class white couple was walking by and saw her, noticed her situation, and said, do you need a place to stay? She said, yes, for me and my children. They took her in. The next morning at sunrise, she got up and made food for her kids and left. Said, please take care of my kids, and I'm looking for work and a place to stay. Whole day passed by. sun went down, she wasn't back, and they were thinking, great, she ditched her kids on us. You know, we got, you know, it was a scam, right? We got fooled. About a half hour after sundown, Grandma Tomasa comes walking in and says, thank you so much for your hospitality. I found a place, and I found some work. You know, we'll go now. You know, thank you. God bless you. Packed up the kids, and off they went. She worked her assets off, bought a parcel of land, and started, her own little kind of food restaurant place, and also farming in the valley. She's got several acres. And people that would work for her, she would let them, you know, have food, and she would make meals for them, and they could also work the fields and have some food from there. The point is, that's not the spirit I see with people that are homeless. They don't have that kind of attitude. They're not Americans. Americans are people who come to this country, want a better life, and will give 110%. Most of the people here in America, they've been raised here, and they give 25-30%, and they quit. But that's not the culture I think.
For me, I think a lot of it depends on certain things. Like, if you were raised in a middle-class America and you have 2 or 3 degrees, and your whole goal in life is ambition and accomplishment, you're not going to be lazy like that. Now, unfortunately, you've lived in Southern California for years. There's a large influx of people. A lot of people have struggled very difficulty there. I basically knew a lot of people in the entertainment business just because I was situated in Hollywood and Los Feliz. But people just get, I think they just get tired of the journey there, and a lot of them get lazy. Now, I do have a friend in Sherman Oaks. Her rent is $1,900 a month, and she's been on and off unemployment for the last 5 years. But when she does get good jobs, it's in the studio like Warner Brothers. And then she gets paid well for a whole year, and then she gets laid off because of the nature of the work. But in California, when you're seeing, especially in your area, like Venice Beach and Santa Monica, there's an influx of people, you know, transients. I'm sure you get your eyes wide open, and I know hardworking blacks in South Central. I know hardworking Mexicans all over the place. It's not, you can't really categorize. It's just dependent on the individual and how they were raised. But I don't think a lot of people like living hand-to-mouth. It's just that they're stuck there.
You know, you raise a good point. I think here's where I'm coming from on it, and that is that everyone has an excuse for whatever you want to be, however you want to act. Everyone can alibi whatever you want. I'm kind of the attitude, do unto others as you'd have them do unto yourself. And so when I say I need help, it's because I really need help. There's no other option. I've really tried everything. I'm not the kind of guy that goes, hey, can you make me a meal? Can you get me this or that? Can you take out my garbage for me? Can you start my car and do this and that for me? No, I will push my car. I will go walk to the auto parts store and bring back my battery on my bicycle. I've done this instead of asking my roomie who's got, you know, 5 cars or other people to help me. It's like, I can take care of this. Now, when I do ask someone for a favor, I really, really need it. I have the attitude, if you put a gun